Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Hi there. I'm Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I am Carol the Coach, devoting this show to the recovery of sex addicts and, of course, helping partners to figure out what they need to do to make their life more manageable. Sometimes I just don't know what's worse. Is it worse to be the sex addict who's plagued with this addiction, who has to have resources available, who more than likely cannot do it on his or her own? Or is it worse to be the partner? You know, you love somebody who has a lot of out-of-control behavior, and you don't know what to do about it. So if you're like most people, in any kind of situation, you try A, and A doesn't work, so you try B, and B doesn't work, and you try C, and C doesn't work, and you know, you kind of go, okay, is it me? Am I not doing it right? Am I not doing it long enough? Am I not doing it firm enough? You know, I'm thinking about addicts and their partners today, and we are devoting this show to the partners of sex addicts, to help them to cope and develop life skills that will get them through this crisis. And I pull from a lot of resources. I pull from my clients. I pull from COSA, which is Couples of Recovering Sex Addicts. And I pull from Recovery Nation and what it has to teach sex addicts and their partners. And you know, one thing I know for sure is that this is uncharted territory, and it's difficult to know what to do. So tonight we're going to be interviewing Elizabeth, who's going to be talking about her struggles, her challenges, and her hope, strength, and recovery in her own quest to deal with being in love with someone who has sexual addiction. What has she done? How has she been successful? She has an amazing story, and when I heard about it, I asked her if she would be willing to be on the show, because she speaks really well. She's tried a variety of things, and she's been relatively successful. You know, this kind of addiction, as with any addiction, more than likely, you don't start at point A and end at point Z. Now, what I mean by that is that you don't know exactly how to handle things. And when you start working on self-care, when you detach from the addict, when you work your own recovery program, when you have faith or belief that things are going to work out, those things are all very helpful. But as with any relationship, there's ups and downs. So you have to wonder, oh gosh, am I doing what I need to do to maintain my own health and recovery, let alone to be the most effective for my addict who is healing from sexual recovery. Now, you know, this is such a tough ball game in terms of what do? And I said, you know, I have worked with people that I knew they were doing the right thing, but they didn't do it long enough. It's kind of like parenting, actually. You know, you know that you want to help somebody eliminate behavior. You want to be a support for them. You want to stay very in tune with what you need to do to be healthy. And balancing that delicate kind of ratio of when do I take care of myself versus when do I help somebody. I mean, in parenting, that's very tough. You know, I've got parents that go, well, I feel like I have to do it for them to show them how to do it. And I say, no, you've done that already. Now it's time to let them give it a shot or not, and to deal with the consequences or not. Well, that's the same with addiction. And so if you're listening and you're an addict, just know that you're going to get some insight tonight from Elizabeth on what she has done to maintain her recovery. And if you are a partner, I guarantee you, you will get a lot out of this show. So if there are sex addicts listening, let your partners hear this show. And, of course, you can go to iTunes, key in sexual addiction, or Carol the Coach and sexual addiction, and up will come the show, and you can download, oh, probably about 60 podcasts. I've been doing this for over a year. There have been a few repeat shows because there's always the holidays that fall on a Monday, but I made it my life's vision to help people in this very difficult situation. And you know, it's not always men who are the sex addicts and women that are the partners. I mean, just today I was dealing with a very kind-hearted man whose wife has been in treatment. And, you know, he said, I've given up. I just let it go on. You know, the text message comes up on her phone and I can see that it's somebody sexting her. I don't have anything I can say because I'm ineffective. There's nothing I can do. Well, I tried to explain to him in front of her, the sex addict. I said, you know what? You're enabling her. Unless you've decided that you're absolutely going to live this life where your boundaries are not respected, it is so important for you to decide what your boundaries are. You know, this couple, they happen to have 4 kids. And so as she's saying, I'm a great mom, I'm saying, no, you're not. Any addict knows that when you have an addiction, your first and foremost mindset is on that addiction. So you're not attending like a great mom does. I'm not saying she's not a good mom, but she's not a great mom. And then he, by allowing her to just have full reign of her behavior, is enabling her. He needs to decide what he's going to put up with. So as they left my office, I encouraged him to call her loved ones and to get an intervention going, and that I would help him with that. And she was right there in the room. And she emailed me today and said, oh, my God, he is contacting every friend and family member I have to get this intervention together. She says, I will be fine. And, you know, I emailed her back and said, you know, I know you think you're going to be fine, but we all really care about you and we want you to get some help. Now, What I know about addiction is, in general, is that sometimes it takes up to 3 major interventions, whether that's an IOP, whether that's a 2, 3, 4 week intensive, whether that's residential treatment, whether that's a halfway house afterwards. It can take some major work to change your life when you've got this disability, this disorder. And so it matters not to me that she's been in a treatment center before. She needs to go back. And maybe she'll take it a little more seriously. Maybe there'll be a little less resistance. But regardless, what I believe about her is it will eventually stick. If she keeps working it, it will work. And I know you may be on the other line of this radio show going, well, Carol, she's not making it work. She's going through the motions. She's appeasing people. And in part, you're right. I mean, there has to be motivation on her part. There has to be some dedication. But I'm here to tell you that I've met plenty of people who got into serious treatment. They went to a residential treatment center, and after they got there, something clicked. And they thought, what the heck am I doing here? And then they realized that their life was out of control, it was unmanageable, and they needed something greater than themselves to help. And again, that can be a program, that can be a sponsor, that can be God, that can be a whole committee of people to make that change. So Elizabeth has a very interesting story, and she's not so conventional. She didn't go the 12-step route. So this is an opportunity to hear another resource that's available to people. And I hope that you will take things very seriously and know that, you know, clearly it matters not what you work. It's whether you are willing to work it. And so I'm very, very excited to have Elizabeth on this program sharing her own strength, hope, and recovery. And we're going to be talking about a variety of things, you know. What feelings did she have? What was the adjustment like? How did she stop the ruminating thoughts? Did she think about leaving? You know, how did she stay? What did she do? And I got to tell you, as I was describing this show, as I always do, I write up a little blurb about it, and, you know, you can go and see what the different shows entail. I put the word prostitution in, and it wouldn't let me send this show out to the public. You know, it said there may be an offending word. And I get that, and I'm glad that Blog Talk does censor on some level, what it is, you know, things that may be offensive. But at the same time, when we're talking about sexual addiction, we're talking about a lot of unusual behaviors, including prostitution. So there's always some obstacles to this kind of work. And I'm here to tell you that this is an amazing woman who has a lot to offer, and she'll be on the show here in the next couple of minutes. You know, we're taking a break from our sexual addictions group this week, and I've missed those guys. You know, you may have heard me say that in some ways I have the blessing of being a woman working with men that absolutely holds no judgment about their behavior. And that's what I'm hoping that you'll find. If you have a sexual addiction, I want you to find a certified sexual addictions therapist by going to www.sexhelp.com, because they have the training to know what to advise, and they'll be non-judgmental. They'll get you, they'll get this condition, and they'll know what to do to help. So I can't highlight that enough. And if you go to my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach, You'll also find that there's a lot of information on there that will be helpful to you. And I encourage you to download every podcast we have on the show. If you know of somebody who has this disorder, or if you are struggling with the disorder yourself, it's a great way to find out what resources are available in throughout the world. You know, treatment centers, books, therapists, programs, workshops. I probably have devoted at least 15 podcasts to working with partners of sex addicts because, you know, they're in so much pain and they don't know what to do. And unfortunately, most partners want to control the other person, and that just never works. And why is that? Well, because you can't control somebody. You can only control yourself. That's what that serenity prayer is about. You know, whether you're religious or not, it's a great motto to live by. And you know how it goes. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, which is always you, and the wisdom to know the difference. So I highly recommend that you think about, if you love an addict, you think about, what boundaries do I need to set to preserve my sanity, to stop enabling, and to get healthier? All right. Well, we have Elizabeth on the line. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show tonight. It takes a lot of courage to come on and talk about your own issues and what you've been dealing with. So I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
Now, obviously, when I had heard your story, I thought, boy, this would be good information, because you have been through a lot and you have tried a variety of things. So do you care if I just start asking you some questions so that my listeners get a feel for what you've had to deal with?
No, that's fine.
Great. The first thing I wanted to ask you is, can you describe your own personal feelings once you found out that your husband had a problem?
My initial feeling was pretty much shock. I just couldn't believe what was going on, and I felt betrayed and lost, like, life that I knew it was over.
Yeah, it's kind
looking
of like
for
that
answers
illusion.
Anywhere. Right.
Yeah. And so you thought your life was a certain way, and then when you found out there was this issue, it shook your entire world.
Right. Just felt taken for granted and, you know, just victimized.
So can you describe, when you say I felt victimized, can you describe what that felt like and what was the mindset that went along with that?
Well, I was thinking that somehow it was my fault, and I was blaming myself. What could I have done differently? What could I, you know, what could I have done to make this not have happened? And a lot of things that, like the values that I had in the marriage as far as trust and sexuality between us, and values of my own, and how I viewed myself in what I thought, like you said, what the life was, I was questioning everything.
Well, and it's interesting because what you describe is that you kind of wondered, was there something that you did to contribute to the problem? You wondered
right.
if you weren't good enough, or could you have done something differently? And don't you agree that that is a very typical response that most
yes.
people go through?
Yes. Yes, very, very much so.
Yeah.
And
so,
I had...
Go ahead.
Well,
I was going to say, do you still feel that way now?
Well, thanks to support groups and therapy and programs that I've worked, when I do start feeling that way, I can check back in and get myself back on track. But I'm increasingly getting farther away from that. But initially there was that hatred and despair and helplessness. You felt shamed and humiliated so much. And I just had to realize that my happiness wasn't directly attached to my husband's addiction, and I had to find myself to pull myself out of it, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, but you know what I know to be true is that comes after you've done a lot of your own personal work.
It comes with time and a lot of work.
Yeah.
Because I wanted it to happen the next hour, the next day, the next second. You know, I wanted it all to be over. And that's not how it works.
Well, and I don't want you to divulge anything you're uncomfortable divulging, but I'm curious as to what happened. What was your story? How did you find out, and how did you react when you did?
Well, when I found out that he was a sex addict, I had already discovered that he had had an affair, and that's all he was, you know, letting me know. He had made an appointment at a Planned Parenthood to get a test, and I had found that he had searched for that and asked him if he was having an affair, and he told me he was. And the story that he told me just didn't really jive, and I kept pushing and pushing. And we went to therapy, I think, once. And after that, he just opened up and told me that he had been soliciting prostitutes. And the number of that at the beginning was like only two, and then it started increasing over time. He would tell me more and more and more prostitutes, and some, you know, more times than with others. And then he had let me know that he had an affair with someone that we knew and someone that he worked with and currently still works with. So I had to work through all of that. And the affairs that he had were short. Like, both of them, from what I understand, were only a few times, and then it was just over. And he says that was just pure sex, and there was no emotion attached to it at all. It was just because he knew he could, and he did. So I had to make a decision if I wanted to stay in the marriage with someone like that. But it was when I realized that he had an addiction that somewhere inside me, I don't know if it's the love that I had for him or because I know people who have been in addiction before, I had empathy for him. And I built on that to try to recover and work on the marriage.
And so it was, in some ways, your understanding about what addiction was. You must have really kind of researched that.
Right.
And I think that it would keep you from personalizing it as much.
Yeah, it's so personal, sex addiction. It's just so personal what's happening. I don't know how many times I wished that he was, you know, drinking instead. I felt like I could handle that better than knowing he was sleeping with other people. But I just had to focus on the addiction and separate, you know, him from the addiction and watch what he did as far as healing, just make my decision if I wanted to stay. It's not a decision you can really make at the beginning, I don't think.
That's a very good point. So anybody who has first found out about discovery, that's what they call that, when you discover that there are some issues and some infidelity and betrayal. And like you said, you kind of pushed it. You became somewhat of an investigator with him to get him more honest with you.
Right. I became the IT person I never thought I could be. And would find stuff and call him out on it, and which I had to pull myself away from that as well, because it just turns you into nothing but misery and misery.
Well, how did you turn yourself away from that? Because there are a lot of partners that become addicted to that process.
As did I. Mm-hmm. I think it's just like with anything, even if you, anyone that's ever struggled with trying to lose weight or trying to, deciding to leave the job you're on to find something better, it's you finally hit that crossroads where enough is enough and you don't want the pain anymore and you don't want to keep living it over and over again and you want to take care of yourself and you decide that you want to do it. Now, that's not to say that once you make that decision, you're always on that path. Like I said earlier, you'll start to falter, and I need to check back in and continue to work. And,
well, that
and
is
check.
An excellent point. Now, when you say that, that had to do with your own personal work.
Yes.
And you almost, yes. In some ways, your life parallels in some ways the addict, because here the addict will have every intention of getting his or her life together, and then they begin to slip back. Well, that's the same thing with the investigation. I mean, I'm sure you thought, okay, enough's enough. I'm driving myself crazy. And then that feeling crept up again.
Yeah, and sometimes I look at his cell phone or his computer when he's not home and think, I wonder what's on there.
Mm-hmm.
But then I catch myself and I say no. And it seems like when I do it, like hours pass by and it's like I'm wasting my life in what I can be doing for myself or something productive or something healthy, you know, even sitting down and watching a TV show rather than, you know, stretching yourself out, wasting hours trying to find something just to let yourself know and be reassured that he's not doing something. It is an awful place to be.
Well, and you happened to get involved with a specialized program. You decided not to go the 12-step route. Can you
Correct.
Tell our listening audience why you decided not to use 12-step programs?
Well, for me, I just wasn't comfortable. There were a lot of, I think it just depends on the group. And I went to a couple of different ones, and the one I went to the most, there were a lot of ladies and guys in there that had been in there for years, but they were kind of negative and just whiny, and I didn't see myself at that point years from now. I wanted to get out of that, and I wasn't sure if that's how they were at all the meetings, and my husband was also going to meetings during that time, and he's a very, very, very private person, and he just was not comfortable. He even ran into someone that he used to work with at one of the meetings, and that just totally threw him, you know, off, and we tried to do things kind of together, I guess. And mm-hmm. So we found a program online, which is, I found it through a support group that I had found online. And it's called Recovery Nation. It's just mm-hmm. recoverynation.com. And they mm-hmm. have workshops for both the addict and for partners. And then once you both go through those workshops, they have couples workshops. And it takes a couple of days, maybe a week, to get your password and everything set up. And then you do the workshop on your own, or if you want to hire a coach, you can. And they have different programs and where they'll be one-on-one with you and help you with your questions and meet up with you. But it's pretty much free otherwise, and you can just do it on your own. And there's a message board where you can talk to other partners or other addicts, and you can post things and say, but I would like to get input from both sides, and it's really a really great program. And
well,
we've
yeah.
really learned a lot from working those lessons through those workshops.
And so will you give us an example of one of the lessons that's part of that workshop?
Sure. I think I may even have one
available to you right there?
Yeah. That's, I guess one of the lessons would be like self-discovery, setting your values, your moral values, and who you are as a person. Like, who are you as, for me, like a daughter or a sister or aunt, and how you see yourself as, you know, as that person and what your values in life are. And they pretty much start you with core values. And then they describe those lessons. Well, first they describe what it's like. They tell you what it's like for this, for your partner and what you're going to be going through. And you can really relate with what they're saying and how what you're going through is normal and this is what would be good for your partner and what's best for you. And it's totally not like give him a break type stuff. It's just, it's to help you survive this. Right. And it tells you too that just like what I said earlier, it's not a good idea to try to decide at the beginning as you work through with your partner. You can see at some point that maybe he's not serious about giving up his addiction, and then you can make your decision then, you know, based upon his recovery. But there's pretty much lessons like that where you would put down, you start out listing what your core beliefs are about yourself and trying to get back on track and help you not be dependent on his recovery or his addiction and or her addiction, whichever, you know, side you're on. And it's so helpful. There's so many lessons and things, lessons on how to reliving what happened and your feelings on it and trying to deal with the anger and breaking it down. You can post these into a forum where the coaches can see them, and sometimes you'll get feedback. And sometimes if you haven't paid, you can ask for feedback, and a lot of times they will give you feedback.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And so you actually, as opposed to a 12-step group that has a sponsor that you can check in with, Recovery Nation has coaches that will assist you in your own process.
Correct. And we meet quarterly, maybe on Skype, but we don't have, like, you don't see each other. And it's very private, and do check-ins, like, how you doing, or if I'm having a bad day, it's not just the lessons. I can go in and send her a message and say, oh, my gosh, this is just happening. And she'll say, I think you should look at lesson so-and-so that we did, and we remember this. And then you go back and reread that lesson, and it's always pretty much on what I needed to read or what I needed to hear.
Right, right.
Pretty much like a 12-step, you know, program when your sponsor says, remember.
Absolutely. And again, I think that's so important because part of the illness is the secrecy. And so if you're actually dialoguing with somebody through email, through instant messaging, or, you know, via the phone, I would suspect that if you're really working on the secretive part of this and you're sharing and disclosing and then getting some assistance, you're feeling better and better and better.
Right. Exactly.
So then, if I can, obviously Recovery Nation has been helpful to you. Would you say it's been helpful to your partner?
It's been extremely helpful to my partner.
Mm-hmm.
He has, you know, when he worked it, you know, I was a little worried at first because he just, you know, just everyone is on their own path. And, of course, I wanted him to get through all of his lessons immediately and be this perfect, well, no such thing as perfect, but this, you know, perfect image of what I had so that I could be better. It was more of a selfish thing because I wanted to feel better and I wanted our relationship to be, you know, wonderful. And, you know, and I didn't want any more of that. So my expectations were such that he should be doing it all the time, but he was on his own path, and he was really standoffish about even getting on the forums or whatever, and it kind of got to the point where we decided that we needed to get coaches. Well, actually, this is a good point. This is a good, yes, point to make about Recovery Nation is we were going to do the couples thing with Recovery Nation. That's what we were going to do.
Right.
We decided that we were going to pay and do the couples workshop. And we made a call and left a message and the number that they had. And the lady who heads it up called us. And she was like, look, I'm not comfortable with you guys starting the couples. Discovery was only, it was probably 6 months in. And she was like, you really need to work on yourselves before you can do the couples. I really would advise that first, which was great to hear. You know, we didn't know. And she kind of coached us through that. And then that's how we got started on doing our own lessons. And when we started doing our own lessons, we were like, oh, my God, thank God we're doing this, instead of just hopping onto the partners, because neither one of us were ready for that, because we had a lot of work to do on ourselves to get comfortable with working with each other. And we're still working on our lessons. We're not even to the couples yet. And we're over a year since Discovery.
Wow, okay. So now, do you ever get discouraged about where you're at or where you believe he's at?
Yeah, a lot of the times. Just like because of what I described earlier. Because I just, one of the things that's noteworthy is just like with any addiction, if you, well, it'll always be there. And it's something that you'll always have to work on, both he and I. Because I can slip back anytime and just be worried just because of something he said or a way he's acting. And I just have to work on myself and he has to work on himself. And setting boundaries within that, and that was one of the things that I learned from my coach on Recovery Nation, is setting my bottom line boundary first, because I was always contacting her and going, he did this and he did that and I can't deal with this, that, you know, there's no way I can deal with him lying. And she was like, but she, the founder of Recovery Nation, has passed away, but she had worked with him. And she said one of the things that he would say to her is, if you set such strict boundaries, you're setting yourself up for failure. Because everyone's going to probably lie every once in a while or say a white lie, and you can't hold, especially an addict, to being honest 100% of the time, all the time, and then scold him, you know, as such. So I set my bottom line boundary, which was if he cheated again, I was gone.
So that was the bottom line behavior.
That was my bottom line. Anything else in between there, I knew I could work with. So that was a great deal of help because I was all over the place with everything.
Well, yeah, and that gave him a break to
work
on himself and not be absolutely perfect. Because you're
right.
When you've got an addiction, you're prone to minimizing, lying, justifying. And if you're hyper-vigilant about looking for every single behavior that may not be noble, you'll find it. And so that bottom line behavior helps you to kind of relax on some of the other stuff and really worry about what is the behavior that you won't tolerate that will probably make you leave.
Right. And how can the addict be comfortable trying to do their recovery when someone's constantly on them about everything? And I didn't want to be that person, but I didn't know how not to be. Because everything was a red flag. I was hypersensitive to everything.
Okay. Well, boy, that gave you some major permission, didn't it?
Yeah,
just
it did.
Just relax. Yeah.
Yes, and that felt good.
Now, you know, I had submitted some questions to you, and you had submitted some questions back to me, and I thought probably one of the most helpful questions was the question where you said, Carol, it may be that people that are listening would want to know what you consider to be the most helpful behavior that he contributed to you. You know, what could he do to help you through this process? So I'm going to ask you, what has your partner been able to do that has really helped you in your own recovery?
what he has contributed is hold on, sorry.
That's okay. I know he's done a lot.
He has.
Mm-hmm.
I would say pretty much if you're serious about the recovery and you want to, and you're an addict and you want your partner to know that you're serious and what they can do that is to just to maintain an interest in healing. Like if you decide to go to 12-step meetings, to go to 12-step meetings and not start slacking off. And being honest is a big thing. And setting a foundation that you can build on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are it's not something that you can fake. I mean, you can go to meetings, but if your heart's not in it, your partner's going to tell because it's going to show through. It's going to show through in every way. But if you're truly, if your heart is really in it, they can tell. And if you really love your partner and you really want to work on it, you need to be serious about doing that. And you have to do the work. You can't just talk about it. You've got to do it and really try to and it's not just staying abstinent from porn or going to prostitutes or having an affairs or whatever your whatever it is that you do in the sex addiction. It's about healing yourself and changing yourself, just like I was talking about for the partners and changing the core values and changing that. And when you start building on stuff like that, your partner can tell that you're serious and that you care about healing yourself and the relationship and her or him.
Right. And so, you know, what is your life like outside of addiction? I mean, what do the two of you like to do? Do you feel like you communicate with each other? What's your life like?
We started doing activities together, signing up for 5Ks and walks and doing more active things together like that. For example, this summer we've planned to refinish our dining room furniture, which is something we would never have thought to do together before. But just little projects like that, so we can, it's team building, and what we're trying to build on now is intimacy.
Well, that makes sense. So you kind of create some goals, some short-term goals that you can work on together to bond and to rebuild, you know, not only your relationship, but the trust in each other. Through even
correct.
Woodworking or, you know, doing the floors or remodeling or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. We did a lot of things like that, too. It seems like it was a distraction from the everyday, oh, my gosh, I've got this problem, and oh, my gosh, he has this problem. What can we do? It, you know, it's not an unhealthy whatever. I can't think of the word. Taking your mind off of the addiction. It's not an unhealthy way of suppressing it. It's a healthy way to do other things that take your mind off of it.
And who created those? I mean, did you work on that together, or was that his decision? Or
I think it was a together thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, talking, probably something in Recovery Nation somewhere.
Okay. Well, I think that is absolutely imperative, you know, that you can get so bogged down in the pain and what people have done to each other. And so it's always good to have positive goals and dreams and hopes together to rebuild that relationship.
Right.
So as we talk about what you did that was right, do you believe that this might have been one of the most difficult obstacles that you have ever overcome? When you think
absolutely.
About your partner's sexual addiction.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the first things in Recovery Nation. They tell you that this will be the hardest, one of the hardest things that you'll ever go through in your life. And that, and they say this, that your life will probably never be the same again, whether you stay with your partner or not, that you'll be affected by the discovery and the shock and everything, and that you need help whether you stay with that partner or not.
Okay.
Because it's going to affect you, and it's important to heal yourself.
Well, and so, okay, they say that to you, and mm-hmm. isn't that, in to some degree, it's very realistic, but it also would give you some pause, as in, wow, am I strong enough to handle the fact that this is always going to affect me on some level?
Right, and when I, it's hard to separate yourself from not wanting to hate your partner more or resent your partner more.
Mm-hmm.
And wanting to heal yourself and work on it. You're exactly right. Am I strong enough to do this?
And so what made you decide, yes, I am. I am strong enough to do this?
I think just because I've been through other things before, nothing quite as awful as this. I was married once before and it ended divorce when I was in my 20s, and the therapy and stuff I went through after that, I grew so much from that, and just so many changes in my life. My, like, both my parents have passed away, and you know, dealing with that pain and trying to get through the grief of those obstacles, and then surviving and coming out on the other end, I knew I probably could survive this. At least I was going to give it a try.
Well, that's amazing. And certainly, again, that speaks to not only your important core values, but also your ego strength, which,
right.
you know, let's face it, when you deal with an addiction, you begin to wonder if you have that ego strength, but you clearly realized that you did.
Right, right. And you just have to be willing to do it.
Okay.
Maybe not even starting out doing it, but just having the willingness to help yourself. And I'm not talking about the willingness to stay in the relationship. I'm just talking about being willing to work on yourself so that you can heal.
Well, I was going to ask you, what do you think the key is to moving on and healing? I know that's a hard question.
It is. The key to moving on, I guess it's what you get on the other end of it. I guess it's like climbing a mountain is always so difficult, but once you get to the top, you finally feel relief, and then it's a lot easier going down, if that makes
mm-hmm.
sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so just having the tools that you learn to be able to work through trust issues and betrayal, even if you stay with your partner or not, knowing that the work that you're doing is going to help you with that,
okay.
maybe helped me, you know, go on with it as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes total sense to me that you know, you kind of reevaluate who you are and you reevaluate your situation. And if you're detached enough to realize you are not your situation, it gives
mm-hmm.
you the strength to say, yes, I definitely can heal from this.
Right. And also, like, self-dependence. You know, you're going to get self-dependence and stepping out of that victim role and hopefully getting to the place where you can make decisions to stay and not make your partner responsible for your own happiness.
That had to be a real relief for him.
I'm sure it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I was doing that even prior to discovery. Not that that means that it was my fault what happened, but I could see as I worked through this that I was always making him responsible for what made me happy. No one can make you happy like that.
Well, you probably didn't even know that you were doing that. Not really.
Mm-hmm. No, not really. And I think it was just because of losing my parents and things like that, I started putting more and more dependence on him for my happiness. The things that I was going through, I think it got more and more intense.
Well, you almost describe it as if maybe there was even a depression that occurred with having lost your parents and dealing with all that.
Yeah, there was. I mean, my dad passed away the same year we got married, which was about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on a pretty big high back then, so it was easier to deal with. But my mother was in a car accident and was in a hospital for almost a year and never made it home. So going through those several months of her being hospitalized from that accident were really rough.
Yeah, I bet. That was a lot of trauma, and, you know, that's the word that I use to describe being the partner of an addict, is that you get traumatized by the discovery, and here you were, you had already had this trauma with your father, but almost, if I can, way worse trauma with your mother's accident.
Yeah, yeah, you've got that trauma, and it's like a wound, and it's hard. And one of the key things I think also is when you're trying to find a therapist to heal is finding someone that specializes in with partners or with sex addicts. 'Cause we were in therapy before we were with someone like that, and they wanted to we would go together and apart, but they wanted to treat it as if just regular marriage counseling, which does not work. You want a therapist that's educated and experienced and passionate about helping partners recover from the betrayal and trauma. And, you know, so you can get that sense of empowerment that you need and find yourself. And they understand that instead of a therapist that just wants to help with marriages.
Right, and help put the marriage back together without really dealing with the trauma.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if you could, tonight, share with us what you appreciate about your husband, because I know this has been a real learning experience for you.
What I appreciate about my husband is his willingness to find his way and to heal himself and be a better husband. Seeing him grow, I'm so appreciative of that. He was so angry before and just kind of get off my back, and I'm doing what I can, and to see him let go of that and really, really yearn for it and want it. And I'm very appreciative of that.
And then tell me what makes you two, what makes you meant to be together? Because obviously you've got your bottom line boundaries, and you know what might happen that where you would not put up with things, but you obviously have that faith that that this is going to work out and that you're both working your program. So share a little bit about how you know that you two are right for each other, at least right now.
I guess it would be the honesty with both on both sides. The continued work on ourselves, learning to forgive each other, and when we're off track, checking in with the other one, and lovingly saying to your partner, hey, are you okay? You seem a little off, instead of coming at it accusatory on both sides, and just helping each other that way. It helps keep you on that mutual respect. because both of us can be very sensitive.
Yeah, and it hasn't been a perfect road. I mean, he's mm-hmm. had some slips and you've had some slips.
Absolutely.
So and when he had a slip, what did you do differently that you know was a healthier choice?
Well, what I do now that's a healthier choice is, well, I'm learning still, but it depends. If he has a slip and he comes to me and says, hey, I slipped and this is what happened, I can work with, I'm always willing to work with him, but I appreciate the honesty so much that it's not a humongous deal. When I'm asking him how he's doing, is he slipping, and he says no, because this has happened too. He says no, and then a few months go by, and he's been acting weird, and I keep checking in, and he says no. And then he tells me, well, yeah, I've slipped for the last few months, and I was scared to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Before I have blown up and just, you know, stay at the hotel for the night or do something drastic like that. But what I'm learning to do is thank him for finally telling me and knowing that he's back on track and just checking in and trying to respect that.
So you're encouraging that honesty no matter what, and you're also
yes.
not taking it as personally.
Right, which is hard to do.
Right, but you know it's part of the process. And really, if you're going to have a partner who is working through his addiction, he's probably not going to do it perfectly, and you don't want to set him back. You want him to work on it on his own.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
mm-hmm.
And another thing I have to do is not take it personal as to when he does slip. Like, say we have an argument on Tuesday night, and then Thursday he tells me Wednesday he slipped.
Mm-hmm.
Then I start telling myself, oh, if I wouldn't have pushed that argument or if I wouldn't have said anything about this, that wouldn't have happened, and I make myself responsible for it.
Okay, yeah.
And that,
well, I can tell you've grown so much in your recovery from how you described yourself initially to how you are now. If there was one last thing you might tell a partner who is listening to this show to give them inspiration or motivation, what would it be?
I think, well, the first thing I would say, if you're just now finding out, is to go get yourself checked out and make sure you're disease-free if there's infidelity involved.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing, I think. And then take steps to keep moving forward, communicating with other partners, whether you're going to 12-step programs or finding a support group online or going to Recovery Nation, trying to work on letting go of the pain that you have and trying to forgive, which isn't condoning,
mm-hmm.
but that forgiveness helps you not be held back, because if you hold on to the resentment and not forgive, it just holds you back personally and keeps you miserable.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for, you know, donating your time tonight and helping other partners who are listening to the show. Your experience and your journey is amazing, and just keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Continued success, and have a great week.
Thank you. You too, Carol.
Okay. Well, as you can see, she's an amazing woman who has learned a lot about recovery, and it can be ever so difficult, and yet she has found a resource that makes it possible for her to understand her husband better and understand herself better and do things that are most helpful with addiction. And as I tell you, during every show, there's only one of you at all times, so I want you to fearlessly have the courage to be yourself and get into recovery, no matter where that is. Have a great week. Next week, we're going to be talking to a doctor, a psychiatrist at the Meadows, and finding out what kind of treatment is available there. I'll be thinking of you. Have a good one.